Desi, love that Green News Report. They always give us the headlines, and then we go drill down a little bit deeper. And I'm very excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about our favorite topic, climate change. So if you're not interested in what's happening with the climate, our weather, our future, our children, well, go listen to some music. But if you are concerned about what's happening and you'd like to hear from the very latest people on the front lines, that's why we call this show The Green Front Lines, stay tuned because we've got a really exciting show. First up, we're going to be speaking with Judy Weiss. She is with the Citizens Climate Lobby, and their conference is coming up in just a few days in the nation's capital. We'll get a sneak preview on what's going to happen, and these people know how to make it happen. I will tell you what we mean by that in just a second. And then in the second half, we'll be talking with Ann Kelly. She is with the group Ceres, and they just had a really important meeting today in Washington, D.C. to discuss what President Obama is thinking in terms of climate policy. So that really is a sneak preview, and I'm really excited to hear what happened there. So thanks to our friend D.R. Tucker, who told me about that event this morning. He's unable to join us today, back to his real job, his day job, but he's the one who introduced me to Rabbi Judy Weiss. When she's not a rabbi, she's a citizen climate activist. Welcome back to the program, Judy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I just want to thank you for all the work you're doing, all the letters you write, all the press and media that you stay on top of. And after I've done that, thank you, bless you. tell our listeners, you know, what you've been up to lately and how that's a perfect sort of build-up to what's happening at the Citizens Climate Lobby Conference in D.C.
Well, lately I've been expanding my citizens' climate work beyond just being a member of the Boston chapter. I'm now also a member of what we call Team Oil. And there's a group of citizens' climate lobby members from across the country who meet once a week on Thursday nights by phone, and we work on plans to reach out to the oil companies, the major integrated oil companies, to try to elicit their help in this climate change business where we need to accomplish. One, we would like to get them to help us express to Congress what are the risks associated with climate change. I think it's safe to say that if they don't get behind a particular policy, for we'd really like to see a price put on carbon, and so would the major oil companies. If they don't get behind it, Congress won't ever. So we would really like to work with them. And we've been studying their web pages. We've been talking to people who are experts in the oil business. And we've been trying to figure out what it is that matters to them and work with them.
Mm. And while you're doing all this, you also occasionally get to watch television programs, probably not for entertainment as much as to see if they're covering all the developments on the climate front. In particular, you just noticed that, well, Media Matters helped us notice that CNBC has done a particularly bad job lately of covering climate change from a scientific perspective, and you were concerned enough to write a letter.
Yeah, I did write to them today. I actually don't watch them, but whenever DR sends our group any kind of information like the Media Matter piece, I write. So,
that's,
you know, I sure would like them to come to our CCL conference and hear what we're working on and why it really matters that the media get on top of this a little bit better than they have been. You know, the media has been part of the problem.
Expand on that. We certainly talk about that here, DR and I, a lot, but I'd like to hear your voice on that, your perspective.
So, in part, the way I think that reporters work is they want to hear all sides of an issue and make sure that they're fair and they're presenting a balanced approach to something. But when they work on a scientific issue, what they seem to miss is that the scientific process of providing peer review of scientific work already accomplishes bringing in a balanced view and having all points, all voices express their thoughts on a subject. When the media then goes to outliers or fringe people who don't even work necessarily in the field or haven't worked in the field in many years, they're not providing a balanced view. They're giving too much weight to the fringe elements that aren't, you know, the center.
And CNBC especially recently has felt the need to, quote, you know, offer balance when that balance is really anything but.
Well, it might be interesting for someone who has the resources and the statistical skills to analyze where CNBC's advertising money comes from, and maybe that's why they're slower to move from this unbalanced balanced approach to actually presenting a clear view of what's going on with climate change.
And perhaps the same with MSNBC, even though they tend to be known as the, you know, more progressive liberal talk show network, they also have a lot of ads from the fossil fuel industry. And while Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow do probably a better job than any other hosts of covering climate change, sometimes, you know, less so, sometimes more so. I think, was it you or someone else who also recently wrote to the management at MSNBC about the same issue?
Yeah, I wrote to them, again, because I was alerted to it by someone else. My state rep, I went to visit him because he chairs the Massachusetts Committee on Global Warming and Climate Change, and he complained to me about MSNBC's coverage of climate change, because I don't really see any television. But so I wrote to them.
Your intelligence is showing, Judy.
Well, no, it's that I don't want to pay for cable, and I live in an area where if you don't have a good antenna, you don't get reception. So there you have it. I watch Netflix, DVDs.
It's practical more than philosophical, but go ahead.
Yeah. So anyways, I wrote to them to express my state rep's concern about their coverage.
And did you get a response?
No, I did not get a response from MSNBC. I don't know that I'll get one from CNBC.
It's interesting how these networks, these executives are in the communications business, but they're so poor at communicating with their, you know, viewers and audience members.
Well, it may just be that if enough of us write to them, that they will make changes even though they don't actually answer any one of us individually. I think that, for example, USA Today did a great job in responding to the need to cover climate change a little bit better. And they decided to make it a real focus of their reporting this year, and they're doing a great job. They didn't answer all of my letters, and I'm sure I'm not the only person in the world who wrote to them, but I think they heard the need, and they're doing a great job.
And they had done a pretty good job, actually, of covering environmental news. I'm not a regular reader of USA Today, but when I am traveling and, you know, in a hotel and they give it to you, I like to look at the pictures and read it, and I noticed that, you know, just coincidentally or not, I would see a story on climate or environment, you know, maybe one out of every three times I saw it, which is pretty good for, you know, on a fairly regular basis compared to other publications other than maybe the New York Times, which has, you know, been better about covering it even while they take apart their, dismantle their environmental desk. So let's talk about the good news. The CCL is coming to town. Was Washington, D.C. going to know what hit them?
We've got a really dynamite conference planned. What would you like me to tell you about the conference?
Yeah, before you do, even though I talk about Citizens Climate Lobby all the time, every chance I get, just give a brief bit of background for listeners who may not be familiar with their work.
So Citizens Climate Lobby was founded basically following the same sort of principles as the organization Results that was founded in 1980 to work on world hunger and poverty and childhood illness. And Results basically trained volunteers to be fluent with the data, the information that needed to be shared with Congress to get legislation passed, and train them in letter writing skills and how to reach out to editors and form relationships with members of Congress so that they could be most effective in getting the legislation passed they wanted. And Citizens Climate Lobby has picked up on that same style of running the organization with regular conference calls, regular training programs by phone. So we don't always see each other, but we're in constant communication. You might want to check out Sam Daly Harris's book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, which describes how he set up Results and the experiences he had, you know, accomplishing their goals.
And also the great article in the New York Times recently about CCL. Did
right.
that get quite a response? I hope it might have introduced you to the whole country.
That's exactly right. So whenever I send a letter to the editor, I always include a link to that these days. But that article came out because his book is being re-released in the fall, and it's going to have a couple chapters on citizens' climate lobbying and climate change.
Fabulous. That's great. So tell us how you operate when you go to D.C. Is this the third conference that CCL's gone to Washington for? And that's just my recollection, but I could be wrong by a year or two. And why are you so effective? What is your secret sauce?
Well, I think it's the fourth or fifth conference. It's my second. I missed last year because of pneumonia. We're effective because We work hard at education. We don't just talk about what we think. We actually have facts to back it up, and we do a lot of research. We're effective because we work hard at learning how to listen. So, for example, when I first joined the group leader in Boston, Gary Rusinski said to me, start reading one of the local newspapers, choose one. He suggested I choose the Lowell Sun and read it every day and see what matters to the people in Lowell and what does the editor, choose to publish in letters to the editor or in his op-eds. What is his focus and what is the tenor of the paper? And only when you know your community or what they're talking about and how they talk to each other, then you can start joining the conversation. And so that's really an important thing. You can't walk into a member of Congress's office and say, this is what I want, if you don't know who they are and what they care about.
And that's important, because if you show that you've been following them or their community, they're more receptive to your message.
Exactly.
So how do you choose who you're going to meet with? Do you go for those who are already the believers and you want to strengthen their commitment to the cause, if you will? Or do you try to go for, let's say, some conservative Republicans who may not want to even meet with you?
That's an interesting question, and it actually is mentioned in Sam Daly Harris's book. We meet with everyone. I think we have 400 or so meetings scheduled with members of Congress. So that's just about everybody, and we don't even have chapters in every district. And it's really important to have bipartisan support for any kind of climate change bill. So that means meeting with everyone, and it means working with people who don't quite get the urgency of climate change and meeting with them frequently enough or with their aides frequently enough to answer the questions and hear where they are and guide them and work with them until they get to the point where they sort of see what we're seeing and will respond to it however they choose to respond to it. You can't dictate to somebody that they're going to want a carbon tax the same way we think a carbon tax is the right answer. But, you know, people come to things in their own way, and we have to help everybody get there.
And how often do you get to meet with the actual representative versus their aides? And just take us through, you know, what typically happens so we can kind of picture being there.
You know, it really depends on the representative and the local chapter. So, for example, in Boston, there are several of us who were in Barney Frank's district, and he met with us personally one morning in his local office, and that was really easy to set up. And yet I have yet to be able to schedule a meeting with Barney Frank's replacement, Joseph Kennedy III. I've written a number of times asking for meetings in the local office, but I think being new to office means he's been incredibly busy just getting up and running and getting an office started, and it's going to be a while till we could have some more local meetings with him. And So, for example, in Richmond, Virginia, we have a very active chapter, and they've met more than a half a dozen times with aides in Congressman Cantor's office. And that's been very wonderful that they have developed such a longstanding relationship and trusting relationship with his office. And I think there are all kinds of patterns across the country. There's not one way.
When I first became aware of Citizens Climate Lobby, it was spoken of as a fee and dividend approach, and now I hear more carbon tax. Is there a strategic decision there, or are both used interchangeably? And what happens when you mention carbon tax, that three-letter word? Do you get, you know, automatic resistance? Because especially in a certain political party, you know, anything that is a tax is just, out of the question.
Well, I think we understand why it was called a carbon fee. Because, you know, tax is sort of a tough word to say to people, and yet it really isn't a tax in the same sense that most people think of it. It will be a charge if and when it's legislated. It'll be a charge paid by the producer of a fossil fuel at the well or mine shaft or port of entry if they import it, and it's paid by them, and yet if done properly, it will be rebated to households across the country. So it's not a tax that the government keeps as revenue for the government. It's a charge for the carbon emissions and the damage that those emissions end up doing. So basically, this fee, this charge, is meant to correct an error, a problem in our free market system and in the pricing of fossil fuels in our economy today.
To level the playing field, and then also with climate change in mind. I mean, this is a crisis, and sometimes drastic times call for drastic measures. And yet this seems like a pretty reasonable approach. When you explain how this would work, especially to representatives or their aides who had that resistance initially, what do they say? Do they say, well, actually, this might work, or this, you know, it seems to me this is like the only thing that's going to work, given how quickly we need to move, and it has to be, you know, a systematic change, you know, from the very top at the very least. Or do you actually find people who say, I've listened, it's not going to fly, you know, because either there's no political will or they just find fault with it. I don't see any real problems with it if we could just get the political will to pass it.
So that's what Citizens Climate Lobby is working on. It's working on developing the political will to pass legislation to stabilize the climate. And the legislation that we think could best be supported is a revenue-neutral carbon fee or carbon tax, however you want to call it. And what kind of response we're going to get this year in Congress, I can't tell you until next Wednesday, because we're meeting with Congress on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm actually hoping to be there. Turns out I'm going to be on the East Coast and may take a train in from New York to join you guys. And I just think it would be a great, you know, experience all around to meet fellow citizen climate activists and also to meet with the people who are, you know, making decisions or not making decisions, especially with such congressional gridlock. Do you go in with high hopes this year? I mean, in a way, things you're making progress, and certainly Mother Nature is making, you know, herself heard and felt in terms of extreme weather events more all the time. So there's some momentum. At the same time, there is more of a deadlock than ever in Congress, it seems.
There is a deadlock in Congress, and yet there's been a huge amount of action in the last year. There's a lot more activism. The difference in the media coverage, I mean, basically newspaper coverage in the last year is phenomenal. A year ago, there was almost never a letter to the editor. You know, there were very few, and there were very few editorials on it. And even newspaper articles that covered what you and I would think would be a climate change story, they didn't even mention the words climate change in it. So there's huge change in the last year. So I'm optimistic that there will be more change in the coming year. I'm optimistic that news reports that President Obama has a long list of executive actions he might take in July and thereafter and announce in July, that maybe that might be a way to open Congress's ears to the need to do something that business will like better than regulation and more regulation and executive action.
And you might want to stay tuned, Judy. The next half hour, I'm going to have someone on who was at a event this morning with President Obama's climate change person and talking about what policy might be coming up in the near future. I can't wait to hear about that. I'll be speaking with Ann Kelly of Ceres in just a few minutes. So before I let you go, let me just ask you, putting on your rabbi's robe here, we have a climate crisis that is getting worse by the day. What would Jesus or Moses do in this dilemma?
What would Moses do in this dilemma? I think that honesty is always the best approach in dealing with a problem, and speaking to people where they are is an important approach. Certainly Moses did that, always spoke to people in language that they could understand. And so what we've been trying to do recently at Citizens Climate Lobby is look at what are the oil companies saying on their webpage, saying about the risks of climate change, because they all acknowledge it, and they all acknowledge that the risks are serious, and they all acknowledge that it's primarily caused by humans' use of fossil fuels. And we've been thinking about how that is a huge statement to say to people who aren't really quite sure about the subject and the need for it. And if the major oil companies say this, then maybe people who aren't quite so sure can sort of listen a little bit more carefully to the subject, because the oil and gas companies are vested in their fossil fuels, and it's a lot more serious when they say it. So that's the kind of material we would like to bring to people who haven't put climate change on the front burner, so to speak.
And one more Jewish question, if you will. You know, we're supposed to practice tikkun olam, healing of the world, and maybe that's why it seems like there's an inordinate amount of Jewish activists in the environmental movement. Maybe it's just my imagination, but why is this something that all of us, Jews and beyond, really must tune into now and take seriously? It's really up to us at this critical fork in the road moment.
Well, I think because the test of a religion, what makes a religion truly fine and truly inspirational, is when it encourages its members to protect the weak in their midst, midst to protect those without a voice, to look out for the interests of the underdog, as it were. And so that's why this is particularly important to all religions right now, that we get to work on climate change action and climate change policy.
Well put, Rabbi Judy Weiss. I hope to meet you in person next week in Washington.
I'm looking
forward. All your great work. Is there a website you'd like to give out for people who might be looking for more information about your work and the work of CCL?
CitizensClimateLobby.org is the place to find out everything about our upcoming conference. It's all, one phrase, CitizensClimateLobby.org. And you can find our keynote speaker will be Dr. James Hansen Monday morning, bright and early, followed by Dr. Xiling Hsu, who wrote the book on carbon tax. And we'll have a tremendous number of workshops guiding people on everything from how to listen to how to get a letter to the editor published or an op-ed article published, and how to meet with a member of Congress.
Wonderful. Well, as they say in Hebrew, yashikoa. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate you being with us today, and again, hope to see you next week. We'll be back in just a few moments and find out what happened already in Washington, D.C. when it comes to climate change policy from someone who was there. Ann Kelly will be right with us.